The following content has been rated for mature audiences only. Viewer discretion is advised.
Well, I'm not an expert. I'm not an authority. I'm someone who has been a murderer for almost 20 years.
Maybe I should have killed 400 or 500 people. Then I would have felt better.
People say Ted Bundy didn't show any emotion. There must be something in that. I showed emotion. You know what people said? See, you really can't get violent and angry.
Welcome to The Squonk and the Hag, a podcast about murder, mystery, the supernatural, and even a conspiracy or two.
Dun, dun, dun.
My name is Mo.
And I'm Kraken.
Welcome on in, guys, to another episode of The Squonk and the Hag. With me, as always, is Kraken.
We have returned with more trauma.
Yes, we have returned. So last week we did have to take off scheduling conflicts and then just seasonal changes. My sinuses and body were just like, nope. So we did take off last week. And then we did want to talk briefly about the schedule coming up here through the end of the year. We obviously holiday season, end of the year, all kinds of stuff. It's very, very busy and a little overwhelming for some. So we actually are going to be switching to every other week releasing through the end of the year. And then starting January, we're going to go right back to weekly releases. But this will just help alleviate some of the extra pressures of the season, I guess. But now that'll allow us a little bit of breathing room so that we can fit in more friends and family and junk.
That, and we can research more horrifying stories to traumatize each other with.
This is true. I have some fun ones on my list coming up here. So one of them, I have no idea how to say this guy's name. It's going to be real fun.
I feel like we could say that about like a majority of the things we've recorded is just, I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name.
Kraken, his last name starts D as in dog, Z as in zoo, H as in haha, U as in umbrella. So I don't know what sound that makes. D-Z-H-U.
That's a good question. I guess it depends on like what country he's from.
Russia.
Yeah, I have no clue.
I can say his first name. His first name's Nikolai.
Let's just go with that.
We'll just call him Nikolai the whole time. Yeah. But that is not tonight. But yeah, I have a few very, very interesting ones on my list that I want to look into. And I know you do as well. So this will give us a little bit of time to research, a little bit of time to see friends and family. I know you and I were talking about this. We have a friend who is going to be traveling for the next year. And we have a bunch of hangouts with him and his wife scheduled for the upcoming month. And just Thanksgiving, winter holidays.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exhausting just thinking about it.
The busy season.
The busy season. Well, it's also busy season for me at work right now because we work with retail clients. So they want everything up and running for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And that means we have all the work right now. I worked this weekend.
Fair.
Did not enjoy that.
I mean, who does?
I mean, it could be worse. Like, I at least love my job and love what I do. So, like, if I hated my job and had to work on the weekend, it would be even worse. But
yeah, it also could be worse. Like, you could have to go into the office. So, I mean, See?
I know we tell scary stories, Kraken, but come on.
That's going to be my next story. I'm going to say I've got a really scary one for you. You have to go into the office. But wait, it's okay though. They're having a pizza party. They only got one pizza and one 2-liter drink. Everyone has to split like one slice.
Oh no! That would be really difficult considering that there's a couple hundred people that work at the company I work for. Could you imagine splitting one pizza?
It's just the meme where they like, they order one pizza, but then they like have their own pizza cutter. So they cut the slices even smaller than like normal slices. So you get like an eighth of a slice.
Oh, no. Actually, when you mentioned going into work, I have to go into the office next week for one day. But I have my outfit picked out. I'm really excited about this.
And that's our scary story with a happy ending.
Now I'm going to lay awake at night.
Fair.
Terrified that I have to go into the office. Krakko. It's not even a Krakko Tale night.
Two episodes in one.
But yeah, so basically just wrapping that up through the end of the year, releasing every other week. So that will be... crap, I put my calendar away. So yeah, you guys can figure it out.
Yes, numbers, dates, yes.
So let's jump into tonight's story before this gets any worse.
Yeah, a story that's already concerned me by the name alone.
Yes, so tonight we are going to be talking about the Orange Sock Killer. And I feel like Krakko's rendition is far better than the real thing.
My rendition was, does he murder orange socks? Does he wear orange socks while he commits these murders? Or does he murder with orange socks, like as the weapon?
Oddly enough, none of the above.
Well, now I'm even more curious.
So Breckenridge, Colorado is a small ski resort town. They do have year-round outdoor tourism for hiking and fly fishing, but of course it's huge in the winter time. It's up obviously in the mountains in Colorado. It's quiet and scenic. It's one of those towns where the locals, everybody knows everybody. They, you know, it's just like a really cute little town. But they had a very odd and distressing day on January 6, 1982. For starters, this is just a weird little story. A local man got his truck caught in a snowstorm in Guanella Pass in the area. So it's up the mountain. Locals know if it's gonna snow, don't go that way. The back end of his truck sank down into the snow, so the headlights are like kind of pointing in the air, and he flashed SOS with his headlights repeatedly, and a passing airplane saw the signal. They called air traffic control, and then emergency services was contacted, and they were able to go rescue him.
Okay, but actually that poses a good question. Why don't all cars have an SOS Morse code flashlight thing on top of the car that you can just press if you break down somewhere, like, and people might not be able to find you easily?
I mean, that would be a really good, helpful, like, safety thing.
Cut this out of the recording. I have a patent to file.
So, unfortunately, that event was not the only thing that happened that night. Two young women also disappeared from the town. Bobby Joe Oberholzer was a 29-year-old receptionist at a real estate company. She was known to be a meticulous planner, both professionally and personally. She had notebooks and ledgers of savings and plans for a horse corral that she was planning to build with her husband and her 11-year-old daughter from a previous relationship. That day, January 6th, she was promoted to the role of office manager at her company. She called her husband, Jeff, to tell him that she was going to go grab a drink with friends from the office to celebrate, which makes sense.
As one does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at the time, hitchhiking was extremely common, especially in Breckenridge. You know, like I said, it's the type of place where town folk, they knew each other. The locals, they recognized each other. So it was like, oh, I'll just pick you up and give you a ride. Bobby Joe said that she was just going to hitch a ride that night, even though Jeff had offered to come into town and pick her up. They only had one car. He owned his own business. He was an appliance repairman. So he would use the car for the day. She would often hitch her ride into town and one back. And, you know, it was her normal routine. Even though hitchhiking was popular, especially in the area, he worried about her safety. You know, it's typical relationship. You don't want anything to happen to the person that you love.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah, so he made her a really heavy key ring. It was this really large brass or some kind of metal ring with this big, like, clip hook on it. So that if push came to shove, she would have a heavy object for self-defense.
Okay, new patent idea. We have a little key ring. It's like a tube. It's the size of like a small handle. And you just unscrew it and it just a chain drops out of it. And you have a flail. Your keys are the flail. You just swing the handle with the chain attached with your keys on the end. I was joking, but that would actually be pretty effective.
The key flail. As seen on TV.
My God, can you imagine if you have a bunch of keychains and stuff on it, like the ones that flash?
Oh my God. You have just created an abomination of...
No, just picture this. Grandma's coming back from the grocery store, and someone tries to carjack her as she's getting in her car at the grocery store in the parking lot. She pulls out the key flail, and as it dangles, just the number one grandma keychain just starts flashing.
It's so wrong and so funny. Okay. Back to our story.
Moving on.
I'm going to try to avoid the key flail. When Bobby Joe didn't arrive home that night, Jeff called the police, and he was told it was too early to file a missing persons report because it's only been a few hours. So at that point, he drove into town and talked to the friends that she was celebrating with. They said that she had left the bar around 7:30. So this, by the time he called the police, went in town and stuff like that, this was around midnight or so. So at this point, she's now missing for hours. He hoped that maybe they like cross paths. Like he went into town while she was coming home. So he returned home to wait for her. And she didn't come home. On the morning of January 7th, the next day, a farmer 30 miles away from Breckenridge found her driver's license on his property. I'm assuming they called the police and the police got a hold of Jeff. But once Jeff found out, he and one of his friends went to retrieve it. If I understood properly, the friend was driving, which would make sense to me, because I know if Chris disappeared and someone found his driver's license, I would be a wreck. But I do know it was Jeff and one of his friends. So they drove out of town, and on the ride there, Jeff saw a blue backpack out in the middle of a field. And it looked...
That's a good eye to spot that.
Well, I mean, yeah. But like if he was the passenger and he's looking out the window and then you see a bright blue backpack in the middle of a sparse field, because you have to think this is winter time. So it's not like there's booming plant life. There was snow on the ground. So you have a bright blue backpack against a bunch of white and gray.
So just so you're aware, if you ever go missing, request that I not be on the search party because I am very unobservant. Even if I was the passenger, I probably would not have seen the backpack.
You'd be on a search party in a wrong state looking.
I would walk over like the body or like a key piece of evidence and I would just be like, it's probably nothing. Or I wouldn't even see it.
Oh, look, a bloody glove. I'm sure it's fine.
Oh, look, a glove with some red stains on it. That's probably nothing.
So he's like, wait. Stop the car. They went and it was, in fact, her backpack. So they went out in the middle of the field. Along with the backpack was a bunch of bloody tissues and one of her gloves covered in blood. So, obviously... That prompted things to change. It led to Jeff organized a search with friends, family, and police. So they started looking for her. About 15 miles away from the backpack and about 5 miles outside of Breckenridge. So they were going 30 miles. This was a little bit past halfway. That is where Bobby Joe's body was found.
Oh, no.
The crime scene was odd, even to police. She was shot twice, but the only footprints in the area were hers. So this person must have been in a vehicle at a distance, something like that, but their feet were not in the snow around her. That really heavy ring of keys was found near the body, along with something that wasn't hers. A single orange sock.
I'm sure it will be explained later, but I just want to ask why.
That was a big question that police had. Like, where did this sock come from? It's not hers.
Just with this alone, I have so many questions. Why is there a sock, and why is there only her footprints? Because if there was a vehicle, there's tracks.
Mm-hmm.
It was Tarzan. He was in the trees.
There was also one of those large zip ties around one wrist, which they assumed was some sort of restraint. Whether it would like zipped her to something or, you know, it wasn't binding her hands together when they found her. Like, it was loose. Like, she had one hand loose, but they did find a large zip tie. We're going to shift a little bit here to Annette K. Schnee, who was a 22-year-old with two jobs. She was a housekeeper at the local Holiday Inn and a cocktail waitress at a local bar called Flipside. On January 6th, she left work early from the Days Inn because she wasn't feeling well. She went to the doctor, she picked up a prescription from the pharmacy, and then she hitched a ride home. She was, you know, like I said, 22, so she was young and full of life. It said that she was very happy and fun to be around. She wasn't married. She didn't have family in the area. But when she wasn't seen after going to the pharmacy on the 6th, a few days later, a friend called and filed a missing persons report. Annette was not found until July 3rd of 1982. So January to February, to March, to April, to May, to June. So that's 6 months later. A boy was fishing in an area approximately 13 miles from where Bobby Joe was found and found the decomposed corpse.
Man, you can't do anything without getting traumatized. Can't have a nice, relaxing day fishing. Probably can't go hunting because, you know, woods.
It's terrifying. And I try not to think about stuff like this when I'm, like, out in the world. But it's like, you know, in the woods, how many dead bodies are out there? You know, walking around, how many murderers have you passed on the street? You know, have you ever met a serial killer? It's possible. Like, especially, I worked at a grocery store right out of, like, end of high school, beginning of college area, time zone, whatever. You have no idea. Serial killers gotta eat. Maybe some of those weirdos that were buying weird stuff.
Yeah.
What if they killed someone?
I don't remember. I was trying to look up the article while you were talking about that, because I'm going to make it even worse for you, as I always do.
On par.
This isn't the one that I was looking for, but apparently it's happened more than once, which is also horrifying. They were working on a road. They were expanding a highway somewhere near me. I don't remember exactly where or whatever, but anyway, the spot that they were going to put, like, the runoff for rain and stuff, like the drain, they uncovered, like, a few skeletons.
Did they ever, like, solve what happened, who they were?
Yeah, because I think it was just an old burial site. It wasn't, like, a crime scene or anything. It was just, like, a historical find kind of thing.
Oh.
But still,
that's far less horrifying, yeah, but
still,
yeah.
The fact that all, like, however many years that had been there, just inches away from this highway, that no one had found it because they hadn't gone over far enough to find it yet.
Oh, that's scary. That's real scary.
And it was like several too, so it was almost like a little small, like it could have been like a family graveyard. I don't think that's what it was, but like there were a few.
Yeah. It could have been a family graveyard. It could have been a serial killer's dumping ground.
Bro, also, speaking of family graveyard.
Oh, no.
Someone could look this up and know what mall I'm talking about, but that's fine, because it's a little bit away from me. But a mall that I had been to, it was a side of the mall that we didn't really go to that often. We always came in from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But this time we went in on the side by the food court. And I was like, what is this fenced-in area over here that's got, like, a weird fountain thing in it? Like, what is this that's just tucked away in the corner of this mall? We went over there to look. There's a family graveyard that's there. The people who own the mall bought the land, but in the contract, they couldn't touch the graveyard, so they just built around this family cemetery.
That's messed up.
And it has a gate and everything.
That's messed up. Like, why?
And the dates on them, they're not even that old. So, like, there could still be people alive today that go and visit these graves that's just right here and by the food court.
Like, I feel like there's so much land in the world that they could have moved over a few hundred feet or something like that instead of building around a cemetery.
Yeah, because I was curious about it. I was like, okay, this is the first time I've ever seen a family cemetery next to a mall, or like right there with a mall. I got to research this. And that's pretty much what it was. It used to be a farmhouse that was there, and the people that owned it just had their family cemetery on the land that they owned with the farmhouse. And then when the mall bought the land and the house, it was in the contract that they couldn't do anything with the family cemetery, so they just built around it. Before we discovered the grave site here at this mall, we always joked that it had that mildewy smell that you usually smell at, like, funeral homes. But, I mean, like, you know what I mean, right? You know the smell I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not a pleasant one.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's just a little bit off. It's not bad, but it's not good. But, like, we always joke, it's because the mall is old. But, and then after that, we were like, so this mall might actually be haunted. All right, cool.
Cool, 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 cool. Never going there.
Anyway.
Annette was also shot on January 6th. It's just that her body wasn't found until July. And she was wearing one orange sock.
Ah, this time she was wearing the sock.
And it was identical to the one found with Bobby Joe. Additionally, in Annette's wallet, police found the business card of a local appliance repair business. And the name on the card? Jeff Oberholzer. Bobby Joe's husband.
Not suspicious. Again, not suspicious at all.
So the police now had a prime suspect, but absolutely no physical evidence tying him to the crime. When they interviewed him, Jeff told them that he had once given her a ride and he would give his business card out to anyone he allowed to hitchhike in order to, you know, maybe get some new customers, free advertising. But he had an alibi. He, on the night of January 6th, was at home with a friend that evening. However, police couldn't find the friend or get an official statement from them for 9 years. They finally got a statement. I do not know where this dude was for 9 years, but they were able to get a statement. It mostly kind of lined up, but there were times that didn't match and some details that were off between the two. So Jeff remained a suspect. However, there are a lot of factors that could change somebody's interview or testimony. Like, I mean, 9 years had passed. Do you remember every single detail of something you did 9 years ago?
Bro, I'm gonna keep it real with you. I don't remember what happened like 9 hours ago.
I actually had to think about it. I was like, 9 hours ago, what was I doing 9 hours ago? And I was like, oh yeah, I was working.
Exactly. I don't even know what time it was 9 hours ago. That's a whole different story.
12 hours ago would have been 7:48 a.m. So 11 would have been 8. 10 would have been 9. 9 would have been 10. 8 would have been... Oh, wait, yeah. So 10:48 this morning. What were you doing?
That's why I don't remember. I was asleep.
There you go. Yeah, so it's like 9 years is a long time. And, you know, so he was still a suspect, but, you know, they're getting a little more evidence. So based on the lack of evidence, there was a lot of stuff in, like, developing theories to try to figure out what could have happened to try to maybe, like, trace the path and, you know, figure out and link everything. Because it's very obvious that these two women are somehow connected. And what they came up with is that it appeared that Annette was grabbed the afternoon of January 6th after she left the pharmacy, which was, you know, mid to late afternoon. They then think she was sexually assaulted inside the killer's vehicle. Afterwards, she redressed in a rush. Like I said, it is winter in Colorado on the mountain. So, yeah, you know, gotta get redressed.
About as cold as it can get.
And because she was in a rush, probably threatened with a weapon, was only able to grab one of the orange socks, couldn't find the other one in the panic and the rush, and not all of her clothing was fastened properly. Her pants weren't zipped right, the buttons weren't lined up, but they think she found a moment of opportunity and tried to escape, and that is when the perpetrator shot her in the back and just left her body out there in the wild.
That's a theory.
Yeah. So then they believe the driver returned to town and abducted Bobby Joe around 7:30 when she left the bar with her friends. Now, she was abducted in the same vehicle, and she was also able to escape. And when she did that, the other orange sock got stuck to her clothing as she ran away from the vehicle. The man then shot her twice and again just left the body. This one was not as close range, and they believe, you know, that's why she was shot twice, but she was killed. And like I said, he just left the body there. Just left it. Now, because of where she was, her body was more easily found.
Yeah.
Because they were doing a search, and I guess it wasn't as difficult. But Annette, because it was like in the middle of nowhere, I believe she was stuck in some brush or something like that. So she went unnoticed for 6 months.
And had more of a chance to conceal the body.
Yeah. And this is... honestly, this is extremely upsetting. Almost 40 years passed with the case officially cold. It was broadcast on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. If you want to check it out, it's season 6, episode 15. But there wasn't a break in the case until 2021, just a couple years ago.
The interesting thing is I used to watch Unsolved Mysteries all the time, so I probably have seen this episode. I just don't remember this case.
Well, you don't remember what you were doing 9 hours ago, so I'll forgive you.
This is true, yes.
So, I had told you that with Bobby Joe's backpack, they found a bloody glove and bloody tissues, and they obviously saved that evidence, and luckily, even though in the 80s... they didn't do DNA testing and all that stuff. They preserved it. You know, it was all ready to go. Mm-hmm. So they gathered the DNA profile from the blood on her glove and used genetic genealogy, our friends. And guess what?
That blood was not her husband's.
Interesting. Also, what's interesting is the fact that they thought that far ahead to preserve it and not just shove it in a bag and put it in an evidence locker somewhere.
Well, I mean, throughout the years, they, you know, forensic science continues evolving like other sciences. So they didn't know exactly what would be the next thing or how they would be able to. But they were like, if something, let's keep it. Let's, seal it up. Make sure it's not going to get destroyed or degraded. And maybe someday we can do something with this.
Yeah, see, like, that's why I'm not a detective, because I probably wouldn't have thought that far ahead. I would have just been like, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Just
throw it in the trash.
Put it in a bag and throw it in evidence.
There's a lot of reasons you shouldn't be a detective, but...
That's just one of them.
That's just one of them. But yeah, you see, especially now that genetic genealogy has been a proven tactic, there are actually police departments who are adding budget. They're reserving budget to get cold cases analyzed genetically to try to close some of these old cases. And you're seeing stuff where the murders were 40 years ago, 30 years ago, etc., because they did save that evidence. That is one thing. Like, once that evidence gets logged, they save it. Luckily, it's something that has opened up a lot of doors. And because it is now, like, there's processes involved. Like, they don't just test it and randomly arrest someone. Mm-hmm. They test it, they get a possible pool of people, and then they make sure that they get a fresh DNA sample that they can compare directly to the one that they have. And they can say 100%, without a doubt, this is our person.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, when they started doing genetic genealogy... as it started kind of coming around, it wasn't as, I guess, I don't want to say respected, but it was something where people were a little leery of it, because it was like, well, how do we know this is reliable? And it's like, okay, yeah, science lies. But yeah, okay. So, yeah. But yeah, I love seeing every time a cold case has been cracked through DNA. It makes me happy.
Well, not just DNA, but like, for me, anytime a cold case is cracked, it's always interesting to me how they did it.
Well, one of the ones in recent history in Pennsylvania, there was this crime, I want to say like back in the 40s or 50s. It was called The Boy in the Box. And it was this young boy. And unfortunately, he had passed away, and he was shoved in this box, and they found him. No one ever identified him. No one came forward as knowing, they had pictures of, like, his face and his, forensic busts and stuff like that. And I think it was this year or late last year, through genetics, they were able to find out who he was. And he still had family that was alive. I think it was like great grandnieces or something like that. But because of genetics, they were able to give this boy a name, give him a proper burial, give him a gravestone.
That's good.
I don't think the crime itself has been solved. But, just the fact that his family now knows what happened.
Yeah, it's like, I know it's not solved as to who did it, but at least there's a little bit of closure.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hey, we know for a matter of fact he didn't go to the store to get a pack of cigarettes 10 years ago. Like,
yeah.
All right, so
but before we hop back into it, I'd give you a brief example of what it would be like for me being a detective. We would be out in the field, like, investigating a case, and I would just be like, yes, the killer was just here. I can tell. The ground is still warm. And then the other officer's just like, sir, it's the middle of August. Everything's warm.
Ah, yes, I can feel it on the wind.
Exactly.
Don't ever become a detective, Krakow.
Or I just look like I'm doing something. I grab a handful of dirt and sprinkle it and let it blow away in the wind. And they're just like, what are you doing? I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just wasting time. I got nothing.
Is it time for lunch? Although I feel like if you were a detective, you would be the one who brings snacks to the crime scene.
I would be the one that shows up eating a donut.
Oh, man. I could go for a donut right now.
She sounds pretty good.
I'm really excited. I know it's a lot of before we get back into the story, but so I have shown you photos and I have talked about the local grocery store does the Boston cream cake,
mm-hmm.
and it's really good and delicious and wonderful. Well, I was craving it and I went to the store and they didn't have any because it's like it's at the bakery and I guess they like make one a day and if someone buys it, it's gone. And I really, really needed that cake that night.
How funny would it be if you came in there and bought the one cake and then you're like, you know, I want another one. And you go back and you forget that you bought the first one. And so you're like.
And I'm just mad at myself.
What nerd would come in here and buy the only cake? That was me.
Well, to get me through, I instead bought a tub of chocolate fudge brownie Ben and Jerry's. But I got a box of yellow cake mix, a box of vanilla pudding, and a can of fudgy chocolate icing. And we're going to make our own. Take that, Redners.
See, I've done it a little bit of a more lazy way than that. Like, I just straight up, I've made them before out of canned biscuits.
What? A cake?
Yeah, you make like little mini cakes. Basically, you make your Boston cream filling, and then you take the donut and glaze it, or the biscuit. You deep fry the biscuit, so then you fill it with Boston cream filling, and then you glaze it with chocolate icing. You got like a little mini Boston cream cake. It's not quite the same because it's a biscuit, but I mean, it's pretty good whenever you don't have Boston cream cake.
Yeah, see, part of it is for me is the moist golden cake.
Fair.
With the pudding, with the icing.
It's a good second if you don't have the cake.
Cake, not biscuit. Cake.
Fair.
Cake.
Cake, yes.
All right, so now, for real, back into the story. Like, for real, real.
Mm-hmm.
Genetic genealogy came back with a pair of brothers, and only one of them ever lived in Colorado. Police finally had a lead. And a name, Alan Lee Phillips. So, who is this guy?
I don't know, but we're going to arrest him.
A mechanic in Breckenridge. He did have an arrest on his record from 1973 for assault and burglary, where he spent 6 months in prison. And he did live in the Breckenridge area. So, he was a local town folk. You know, one of those, everybody knows, hi, how you doing? So now that they knew this, police started digging into the case once again, full blast. And they're like, okay. They knew they needed to secure a sample of his DNA directly from the source to compare to the evidence in order for it to stand up in court. It took weeks. He didn't leave the house very often, and even going through his garbage, they could not find any viable samples. It's like anything that could have had DNA in it was not in his trash. And then...
That's suspicious.
Yeah, it is.
But wait a minute, does that mean like after all these years, this man was still covering his tracks?
Either that, or he heard, like, through the grapevine, maybe, that they had DNA evidence or something. I don't know. I have no idea.
I can't imagine, like, being that thorough that everything you threw away, you cleaned the fingerprints off of it before you threw it away for, like, that however many years that was.
Well, it wasn't fingerprints. It was DNA.
Well, still, like, wiping off everything.
Well, the only thing I could think of is maybe he burned it.
Fair, yeah.
Like, you know, either, like... In a, like a, the wood stove. There we go. I'm like, I know it's simple words. It's simple words. We got this. You know, like in a wood stove or something like that.
Yeah, either that or his garbage was just so disgusting that it just all got contaminated.
Ew, I didn't think about that. it. Yuck.
I mean, depending on what he threw away with it, I mean, it could be like you can't get a sample because there's like leftover food or, you know, whatever.
Toxic sludge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My first chemistry set.
So finally, after weeks of following him, one day he stops at a Sonic drive-in. And he threw his trash in a public trash can. I just did a little happy dance that no one could see. So they immediately grabbed it. They took all of his discarded food packaging and drink and all that stuff. And they were able to test it. And they got a match.
So that's interesting because, like, I know it's a rare chance that you would see something like this happen. But can you imagine you're just out at Sonic having lunch and you just see some men in, like, dressed a little nicer, like maybe they've got on like button down shirts, like business casual, and they're just digging through the trash.
Well, I don't know if they like dug through the trash or like, I don't know if it was on top, if they took the whole trash bag, like I don't know how they do that, but I imagine they have to do like the bags and the like actual like chain of evidence, you know,
probably
all of that stuff. So
they had to take something out of the trash.
Yeah. You're just like sitting there eating your hot dog and you're like, oh, look at them gathering evidence out of the trash. I'm no longer hungry.
No, that's not what you would do. You would continue eating and walk over and try to figure out what kind of case they're trying to crack and if you could help.
I would probably talk to them. I'd be like, hey.
Who are we looking for?
I know. One time, I was at Dragon Con down in Atlanta, and there were police in the lobby, just hanging out there. I don't know, like, because Dragon Con's insane, so I think they were just there for, like, upped protection or to see the crazy people in costumes. Yeah. And my one friend and I were, like, talking to him about, like, what's all the stuff on your belts? Because, like, you know, police have, like, those belts with, like, 9 million things on him, and he went through. He was very nice. I'm sure he's used to dealing with children who ask the same questions, but he's like, you know, I have my handcuffs, I have my flashlight, and he like went through all the different stuff he had. But yeah, I was just like,
play show and tell.
It was fascinating. But yeah, I would probably be like, hey, do you have any extra like bags or something, or a souvenir I can have, and what are you doing? What kind of case is this? What's going on? Who died? Yeah, I would be that annoying person.
You need to find out if your local police department does the, I don't know if they call it something different, but here they call it Citizens Academy, where they basically just go through and tell you the process of how they do everything. They tell you everything that they can.
Mm-hmm.
And any questions you have, it's pretty much just show and tell. It's police school without the commitment.
I'll have to look at that. I'll have to find out. Like, I would like to, not necessarily police school, but detective school. Investigator school.
Well, again, every place probably does it different, but mine was basically that. They went through every department, like the lie detectors, the detectives, forensics. They did each department.
That's really cool. And they didn't lock you up, which is exciting.
Exactly. And the dog didn't even chase me or anything. I did get to pet the pupper, though.
Pet the pupper! So, the Lancaster, Pennsylvania train station, there is, I believe, he's either a drug-sniffing dog or a bomb-sniffing dog. But he loves his job. Because, like, I've talked to his handler and everything like that. And he's like, yeah, he gets more excited to come here than he does to go to the park. Because
mm-hmm.
He just, him and his handler, they just walk around. Like, we have this tiny, there are two tracks. One that you can go from Lancaster to Philadelphia. And one that you can go from Lancaster to Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is not a big train station at all. But they just walk around and they do their laps. And this dog is just so happy. He's like a golden retriever. And he just trots around with this little vest on. He's so cute.
That's basically what they said about their the canine that they use at my local sheriff's department.
Yeah.
They're like the one that they use to track down missing people or suspects or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, the dog just gets excited because they get to go out and play in the woods and stuff, and they get to smell all these new smells.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
And it was funny because they also have the bloodhounds that are more specific for just tracking missing people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, but sometimes we can use them to intimidate the suspects if they're not wanting to cooperate, because the dogs are just happy to be here and they're barking because they see new people. But the suspect doesn't know that they're barking because they're just happy. They think they're barking because they want to bite. One more thing. We're having nights of tangents tonight, I guess.
I love how it's been like one more thing for the past 15 minutes. I love it.
You were talking about different methods of things when I was talking about the bloodhound and everything. Have you seen the video where the officer, I forgot where it's at, he was chasing two people, they got out of the car and ran through the woods and were making their way down like a little hill to go through the woods? The officer just started barking to make them think that he had a dog, and he didn't.
That's hilarious. Oh my god.
And it worked.
That is amazing.
Body cam footage is even more hilarious.
Because he just starts barking.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. We're almost through. We're almost there. They had a match. They knew it was him. And this is when his alibi started to fall apart. On January 6th, 1982, Alan Lee Phillips was the man in the pickup truck stuck in a snowstorm up in the mountains.
No.
Yep. Locals, they knew not to drive up there during the snow. And they're like, why was he in this remote area when he knew it was dangerous? He knew he would most likely get stuck, if not worse. The local fire chief, Dave Montoya, was the one who rescued him. And Phillips told him that he got drunk and took the mountain pass to avoid traffic and police. When Chief Montoya asked about the large gash over his one eye, Phillips said he hit it on the truck trying to get it out of the snow. At the time, it seemed stupid, but it didn't seem suspicious. It seemed like a drunk dude doing something stupid and getting himself into trouble.
Because I can't even think of how you could be trying to get a truck unstuck out of the snow and you get a gash over your eye.
I don't know, but like, you know, in the moment, he's rescuing this guy from up on the mountain. He's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah, fair.
Like, without knowing, like, at the time, he didn't know two women were missing. He didn't know that they were dead. He just knew that there was this idiot stuck up there that made him have to trek up through the snow. Now that they know that his blood was all over Bobby Joe's glove, her backpack, the tissues, now everything started falling apart. So Alan Lee Phillips was apprehended on February 24th, 2021. He was convicted of 2 counts of first-degree murder after deliberation, 2 counts of first-degree felony murder involving kidnapping, 2 counts of first-degree murder involving robbery, and 2 counts of second-degree kidnapping. All of these charges came with 2 consecutive life term sentences, so he would be spending the rest of his life in jail. And I'm always conflicted when I hear about this, but on February 27th, 2023, at 71 years old, he took his own life while serving his sentence in an Arkansas maximum security prison. And I don't like hearing about anybody taking their own life. And then additionally, doing so to avoid paying for your crimes is upsetting to me.
Yeah. Like, I do get it on one hand, like, taking your own life is never good no matter who it is. But on the other hand, he wasn't a very good person.
But after 40 years, the mystery was solved. Jeff Oberholzer was cleared. And, you know, all these years, he obviously was proclaiming his innocence and, you know, he was raising her daughter and, you know, he lost his wife. And yet he spent 40 years being framed as the bad guy. So that's a little upsetting too. But
because I'm sure, like, all of his friends and neighbors and stuff were kind of unsure of him at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, they don't think he could do something like that, but with him being accused, they were probably having second thoughts or just like, do I really know this man?
Well, yeah, and like, you have to think of all of those cases that we've talked about, like Dennis Rader. Like, no one had any idea what a monster he was.
With this story, for example, like, how do you think the fire chief felt when he found out that this was the dude that he saved from the out of his truck that night?
Yeah.
It's just weird to think about people having run-ins with serial killers who have may have just murdered someone and then they're not showing any signs of being any different. They're just a normal person, but...
Well, look at Dahmer. He got pulled over by a cop with a body in trash bags in his back seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And, like, I understand that criminal justice is a process and there are rules and regulations, but sometimes you're just like pulling on your hair, like, oh my God.
I guess that's the whole hindsight 2020 thing. It's just like, after it's all said and done, you look at all the little mistakes they made and you were just like, they could have done this instead. But yeah, but they didn't have all the information, so they couldn't.
Yeah, like, nobody knew that he was a killer.
No, it's just a drunk guy stuck out in the snow who was being dumb. They have no reason to think that he killed somebody.
One of the things that I kind of wonder, because he was scot-free for 40 years. Did he really not have, I guess, the urge to kill again? Or are there bodies out there that they do not know this guy, killed them?
Well, I mean, look at the Zodiac Killer. I mean, they never figured out who that was. Who's to say he stopped? Maybe he just got better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not terrifying at all.
Maybe he took the interactions whenever he was sending the letters and everything that, like, oh, so this is what they look at.
Great.
You learned.
Not sleeping tonight. Thanks, Krakow.
Or maybe it was someone who was working on the inside at the police department in the area.
You know, the past few nights I've actually been sleeping well.
No, we can't have that.
Damn it, Krakow.
Just like the guy who likes to break into houses and hide in closets and watch people and then leave with leaving no trace. You know, maybe he just got good.
I hate you so much.
I mean, hi, you're my best friend.
Yes, because only best friends traumatize each other like this.
I mean, if we don't do it to each other, who will?
Exactly.
Anyway, okay, so that is our story for this evening. The Orange Sock Killer, known as Alan Lee Phillips.
It was very interesting. Again, one that I don't think I've heard. If I had, I don't remember it because I don't remember what happened 9 hours ago. So
I'm surprised you remember that we were talking about 9 hours ago.
True.
So just to wrap up, a quick reminder that for the rest of the year, the rest of 2023, we are going to be releasing every other week just because life. But then starting January 1st, we will be back to every week. And leave us comments or reviews or something. That's a thing. And we have... Oh, I've been redoing our website.
Oh, yes, that.
Yeah, I've been working on it slowly. So you'll see, like, the homepage and the episodes page are all shiny and new. There's still some stuff that I'm working on, so please be patient. 'Cause I do this and work full time and have a life, kind of. Not really.
Like police and detective work, it's a process.
It is a process. It is. It is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's all I got. You got anything else, Krakow?
I think that is all.
All right, well then, we will see you guys in 2 weeks.
Okay, bye.
As always, make sure to check out our website for all of the show notes, sources, and more information at thesquonkandthehag.com.
And we would also love and appreciate your support by either leaving a review on iTunes or through small monthly donations using the viewer support link in the description. And if you don't subscribe, make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast network to get notified of new episodes every Thursday.
All right, Krakow, you ready?
Goodbye. Okay,